Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners. So we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel talks about how the pandemic is affecting the college application process. Then Alice Bryant gives us a report on the vaccine efforts in Africa. I will return with this week's words and their stories. We will finish our 30 minutes together with the making of a nation. But first, the education report.
One of the most important parts of a college application is a student's list of extracurricular activities. A student might be a member of a sports team, spend time tutoring younger children, or taking part in a school's theater program or singing group. Some students might do all of those things. Usually at this time, American high school students are finishing their college applications. They are also visiting universities and taking admissions tests like the SAT. But this is not most years. Since most people are not traveling, students are taking video campus tours. Universities that used to talk to possible students in person are doing so by video call instead. Along with written applications, universities are asking students to send video introductions. Some schools asked students to write about how the pandemic changed their lives. One student whose life is different over the last 10 months is 18-year-old Kiddist Bekele. She grew up in Ethiopia, but now lives in Annandale, Virginia, near Washington, D.C. On her application, she wrote about what it was like coming to America in ninth grade. Bekele said she wants to be an engineer and is hoping to go to a university that offers good science classes. She said, attending school over video most of the last year has been hard, especially in science and math classes that require a lot of help from teachers. She also missed the support of adults at her school who could help with college applications. Completing her application at home was not easy. Laura Wells is one of the Annandale High School advisors who works with students like Bekele on their college applications. In most years, the process begins 1 year before students complete high school. They start writing their essays in 11th grade. Then the next year, they only have to prepare the application. Wells and her students are hurrying to finish some parts of their applications this year. In October, Wells said, she put her own children to bed and then spent the rest of the night making video calls with her students so she could help with their applications. She said, it is much easier to do work on an application in person than on a video call. Many students Wells works with have parents who are not U.S. citizens. They are immigrants and have a permanent resident card, sometimes known as a green card. As a result, the teenagers need to provide additional documents to include with their application. Sometimes they have to take an extra test to prove they can speak English well enough. The questions are so confusing, Wells said. The pandemic made it hard to complete the applications, and Wells said it limited opportunities for younger students who wanted to try new activities. Students are still trying to improve their standing, even without traditional resume builders. Wells said one group worked on a project for Amnesty International. Another organized an effort to send reading materials to students in Africa. Bekele said she and her friends from East Africa organized an Ethiopian and Eritrean association and held meetings online. Wells said even if students are not able to join clubs or get involved in group activities, there are still ways to show American colleges their abilities. Students can take a free online class from a U.S. university in a subject that they could not take at their own school. They can do these classes in their free time. Extra activities can make a difference to the people who consider applications. The pandemic also made colleges and universities worried about how many students to accept. Some students are putting off college until a vaccine is available. As a result, many small colleges are worried they may not have enough students. Those colleges are making it easier for students to apply and to be accepted. Other universities that are difficult to get into, like Harvard, are worried that they may have too many students. Last year, some students who were accepted decided to wait a year. This year, Harvard offered acceptance to only about 7% of early applicants. I'm Dan Friedel.
Now, here is Alice Bryant.
Many African countries are expected to receive their first COVID-19 vaccine doses in March from the United Nations COVAX effort. The World Health Organization's Africa Director recently announced the plan. The statement comes as deaths on the continent from the disease have been rising. COVAX is a plan from the WHO, the European Commission, and France to vaccinate people in poor and middle-income countries against COVID-19. Matsidiso Moeti is the WHO Regional Director for Africa. She told reporters that a larger supply of the millions of doses from COVAX is expected by June. It is the second major vaccine announcement in 1 week for the African continent of 1.3 billion people. Last Wednesday, the leader of the African Union said 270 million doses came from Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca through the Serum Institute of India. About 600 million doses are expected to be provided through the COVAX effort. Doses are expected to be given to countries based on population size and the severity of their health crises. Health workers will receive the doses first, as thousands of them have been infected. African countries are now recording about 30,000 new virus cases each day, compared to 18,000 during the first surge months ago. John Nkenga Song is director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or Africa CDC. He said that confirmed deaths from COVID-19 jumped 21% in 1 week in Africa, with more than 5,400 reported. This second wave of infections is hitting very, very hard, said Nkenga Song. South Africa is one of the world's hardest hit countries. A highly infectious variant of the virus now makes up most new cases. The country has more than 1.2 million cases, including 35,000 deaths. The WHO's Moeti said gene sequencing tests have found the new variant in three other countries, Botswana, Gambia, and Zambia. Africa CDC Director Nkenga Song said the fast-growing number of cases means we run into short supplies of oxygen. He has been seeking to increase the supply to Africa, where medical oxygen is not easy to get. Vaccine doses from the COVAX effort are expected to reach 20% of the population in Africa. Officials are pushing to secure enough doses to meet the goal of vaccinating the 60% needed to achieve herd immunity against the virus. I'm Alice Bryant.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore everyday words and expressions. We give examples on how to use them, and sometimes we give you the origin, where the expression comes from. Today, we are going to talk about a very small, sharp, and useful object, a pin. We use pins when we sew clothes. We also use pins in some art projects. And we use pins to attach things to our clothing. The sharp point easily goes right through most kinds of cloth. And pin gives us our expression for today. To pin your hopes on something. If you pin your hopes on something, you hope very much that it will help you succeed. You attach your hopes to it. When we pin our hopes on something, we really want it to happen. It can also mean to have expectations connected to the success or performance of a person or thing. For example, a friend of mine really wanted to attend a well-known college. But the tuition cost a lot, and she did not have much money. So she pinned her hopes on winning a scholarship. When the scholarship fell through, she was pretty upset. On the same day, she got more bad news. A very old and very distant uncle had died. It was sad news, but there was a silver lining. You might ask, what good could come from that? Well, this uncle left her a lot of money. Some word experts say the expression dates from the 1500s. It may have come from soldiers pinning their leader's insignia on their sleeves. This showed where they belonged and who they supported. By the 1800s, however, it took on its current meaning. Here is an example. Listen to these two friends talk about saving money for the future.
So, how much money have you saved so far? You know, for your retirement.
None, but I play the lottery every day.
I don't think it's a good life plan to pin all your hopes on winning the lottery.
You're right. I should have a plan B. I know I will get on a game show and win a lot of money.
I think you should talk to an expert.
There are game show experts?
No, I mean a financial planner.
Oh, that kind of expert.
Yeah, it is not a good idea to pin your financial hopes on a lottery. And in life, it is probably not a good idea to pin all your hopes and dreams on other people. Instead, pin your hopes on you and what you can do to make things better. And that's all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The United States Constitution guarantees freedoms such as freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion. The Bill of Rights in the Constitution protects these and other individual rights. But the government has not always honored all of the rights in the Constitution. In the 1700s, for example, President John Adams supported laws to stop Thomas Jefferson and the Democratic Party from criticizing the government. During the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln took strong actions to prevent newspapers from printing military news. And during the 1950s, Senator Joseph McCarthy accused innocent people of being communists and traitors. Some of the most serious government attacks on personal rights took place in 1919 and 1920. A number of government officials took sometimes unlawful actions against labor leaders, foreigners, and others. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe discuss the campaign that came to be known as the Red Scare.
These actions took place because of American fears about the threat of communism. Those fears were tied closely to the growth of the organized labor movement during World War I. There were a number of strikes during the war. More and more often, workers were willing to risk their jobs and join together to try to improve working conditions. President Woodrow Wilson had long supported organized labor, and he tried to get workers and business owners to negotiate peacefully. But official support for organized labor ended when strikes closed factories that were important to the national war effort. President Wilson and his advisors felt workers should put the national interest before their private interest. They told workers to wait until after the war to demand more pay and better working conditions.
In general, American workers did wait. But when the war finally ended in 1918, American workers began to strike in large numbers for higher pay. As many as 2 million workers went on strike in 1919. There were strikes by house builders, meat cutters, and train operators. And there were strikes in the shipyards, the shoe factories, and the telephone companies. Most striking workers wanted the traditional goals of labor unions: more pay and shorter working hours. But a growing number of them also began to demand major changes in the economic system itself. They called for government control of certain private industries. Railroad workers, for example, wanted the national government to take permanent control of running the trains. Coal miners, too, demanded government control of their industry. And even in the conservative grain farming states, 200,000 farmers joined a group that called for major economic changes.
All these protests came as a shock to traditional Americans who considered their country to be the home of free business. They saw little need for labor unions, and they feared that the growing wave of strikes meant the United States faced the same revolution that had just taken place in Russia. After all, Lenin himself had warned that the Bolshevik Revolution would spread to workers in other countries. Several events in 1919 only increased this fear of violent revolution. A bomb exploded in the home of a senator from the southeastern state of Georgia, and someone even exploded a bomb in front of the home of Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer, the nation's chief law officer. However, the most frightening event was a strike by police in Boston, Massachusetts. The policemen demanded higher wages, but the police chief refused to negotiate with them. As a result, the policemen went on strike. When they did, thieves began to break into unprotected homes and shops. Massachusetts Governor Calvin Coolidge finally had to call out state troops to protect the people. His action defeated the strike. Most of the policemen lost their jobs.
All this was too much for many Americans. They began to accuse labor unions and others of planning a revolution. And they launched a forceful campaign to protect the country from these suspected extremists. Leaders of this campaign accused thousands of people of being communists or Reds. The campaign became known as the Red Scare. Of course, most people were honestly afraid of revolution. They did not trust the many foreigners who were active in unions, and they were tired of change and social unrest after the bloody World War. A number of these Americans in different cities began to take violent actions against people and groups that they suspected of being communist extremists. In New York, a crowd of men in military uniforms attacked the office of a socialist newspaper. They beat the people working there and destroyed the equipment. In the western city of Centralia, Washington, four people were killed in a violent fight between Union members and their opponents. Public feeling was against the labor unions and political leftists. Many people considered anyone with leftist views to be a revolutionary trying to overthrow democracy. Many state and local governments passed laws making it a crime to belong to organizations that supported revolution. 28 states passed laws making it a crime to wave red flags.
People also demanded action from the national government. President Wilson was sick and unable to see the situation clearly. He cared about little except his dream of the United States joining the new League of Nations. But Attorney General Palmer heard the calls for action. Palmer hoped to be elected president the next year. He decided to take strong actions to gain the attention of voters. One of Palmer's first actions as Attorney General was to prevent coal miners from going on strike. Next, he ordered a series of raids to arrest leftist leaders. A number of these arrested people were innocent of any crime, but officials kept many of them in jail without charges for weeks. Palmer expelled from the country a number of foreigners suspected of revolutionary activity. He told reporters that communists were criminals who planned to overthrow everything that was good in life.
Feelings of fear and suspicion extended to other parts of American life. Many persons and groups were accused of supporting communism. Such famous Americans as actor Charlie Chaplin, educator John Dewey, and law professor Felix Frankfurter were among those accused. The Red Scare caused many innocent people to be afraid to express their ideas. They feared they might be accused of being a communist. But as quickly as the Red Scare swept across the country, so too did it end in 1920. In just a few months, people began to lose trust in Attorney General Palmer. They became tired of his extreme actions. Republican leader Charles Evans Hughes and other leading Americans called for the Justice Department to obey the law in arresting and charging people.
By the summer of 1920, the Red Scare was over. Even a large bomb explosion in New York in September did not change the opinion of most Americans that the nation should return to free speech and the rule of law. The Red Scare did not last long, but it was an important event. It showed that many Americans, after World War I, were tired of social changes. They wanted peace and business growth. Of course, the traditional way for Americans to show their feelings is through elections. And this growing conservatism of the nation showed itself clearly in the presidential election of 1920.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.